What is going on, hockey fans? Welcome back to another episode of the Avalanche Warning, Season 1, Episode 3, brought to you by the Hockey Podcast Network. Bringing you back into Avalanche land, I'm Bailey Curtis. I've got Gavin Osagera and Grant Foster here with me as well. Surprisingly, no breaking news as of recording this episode. That could change here in the next hour. We were hoping, because it's been a little quiet, as far as roster moves go, but we do have a little bit of breaking news that's a little older as of recording this, and then some kind of discussions to keep, you know, the ball rolling on what is easily becoming a very boring off season, as normally happens around this time of year, as we anticipate a schedule drop. First thing on the docket, Ray Bennett's empty position on the Avs coaching staff has officially been filled. Former head coach of the Seattle Kraken and Dave Haxtell joins Jared Bednar's coaching staff and will likely spearhead the power play for the Avalanche, hopefully fixing what was a very problematic man advantage for the Avalanche last year. Gavin, we'll start with you. This is the guy who took the Seattle Kraken to round two in, what was it,
2023?
Yeah, 2023. So this is a guy who's got a bit of a winning, a streak for winning underneath his belt. The power play didn't look great or stellar underneath him. I think the best that they ranked underneath Dave Haxtell, the Seattle Kraken anyway, was 17th by the end of his last season with the Kraken, or somewhere around there. Your thoughts?
Well, I want to clear some things up about Dave Haxtell a little bit, because I actually was like, when I saw that they hired him to be the power play coach, I was initially not very happy because obviously, like you said, Seattle wasn't great with the power play. But then I kind of was like looking into his entire career. Obviously was a guy that spent 15 seasons in the NCAA for the University of North Dakota, then came over and was immediately a head coach for the Philadelphia Flyers. Probably a mistake, probably should have been an assistant coach first before jumping right into the fire. But nevertheless, he is a trusted coach. He plays very well with the system. We saw this with the Seattle Kraken. They were able to effectively button up, be incredibly disciplined, and beat the reigning Stanley Cup champions, the Colorado Avalanche, in a game seven. Now, obviously, the Avs were super injured, but then they managed to take the Dallas Stars to a game seven the very next round in round two as well. So definitely a team, or a coach, I would rather say, that has a lot of structure and has a lot of discipline that he instills in his players. And that's something that I am personally very interested to see how that works out for the Avs and how that looks going forward, to have such a strong voice like Dave Haxtell to hopefully yell in the face of the Colorado Avalanche, who have been stagnant for the last 3 years. And it's something that they quite honestly need. And obviously with the hope of, with the help of Gabe Landeskog returning, that should be good. But just the final point before I throw it over to Grant is Dave Haxtell actually has never managed a power play in his life. Other than, of course, when he's playing in the NCAA. In with the Philadelphia Flyers organization, he was not managing the power play. He was the head coach, not the assistant. With the Toronto Maple Leafs, he was the assistant coach, but he wasn't the one managing the power play. I actually looked that up. That was someone else. And then with the Seattle Kraken, he was not managing the power play either. He was the head coach. That was either, I think, can't remember his name. I know Jessica Campbell kind of was helping out a little bit when she wasn't the assistant yet. But yeah, there were several other people that were helping with the power play, but Dave Haxtell's never ran a power play before. So I'm pretty interested to see what he takes from his system, his good awareness and how to manage a system and how to pretty much shut teams down and how he applies that to the power play, if he is the power play coach, unless the Avs hire someone else to be the power play coach as well.
Let me point this out as well too. In his time coaching NCAA hockey with, I believe it was the University of North Dakota. Yep. He brought them to a regular season championship So even like, obviously, you know, these power play points, it's really going to be interesting to see how he buds with the Avalanche system coming into this year. But this is a guy, again, like I mentioned, who's got a couple wins under his belt in junior hockey. Like, this is a guy who is no slouch when you are looking for somebody to command a really, really important aspect of a professional hockey team. Grant, I'll throw it down to you.
I actually didn't know that Dave Hextall didn't actually manage the power play. But I will say, though, if he is coming in to do that job, I bet he probably had his say in the power play with Seattle Kraken and his other coaching jobs. I will say, though, he's got more talent, I think, coming to the Avalanche with Makar, MacKinnon, Natchez, Landeskog, hopefully Nichushkin if they put him on the top power play. You still got to figure out who you're going to put on the right, because you're not taking MacKinnon or Natchez away from the left, you know, or substituting that. So there's definitely some thought process that's going to have to go into this, because the power play just was not good. It was not good enough. I mean, they sat around an expected goals for percentage around like 89% for most of the year. It took a bit of a spike at the end of March, but I mean, those are games that, you know, those are really deadweight games. The Avalanche knew who they were going to play already. And then, you know, going down your stretch here, or in the last six games, like, your expected goals for percentage are 89%. And, like, that's great and all, but I think we all remember not seeing them not score on the 5-on-3 a power play in both. I think it was both game four and game – no, it was game three and game five that we had power plays going into the overtime. And honestly, it's just it just has to be better than that. The Avalanche and their power play system, I mean, take away the fact that you had a rotating door of who you were going to put up on the top power play of, you know, Mika Rantanen was there for a while. That, you know, they were just fluctuating anybody they could in that bumper spot. But you the power play has to be better. Everybody watched the Oilers and the Stars in their Western Conference final, where the Oilers were almost scoring at will on the power play. And maybe that didn't help them when they got to the Stanley Cup final in game seven, because there was no power plays called. But still, I mean, they were absolutely lethal. And you kind of have to, you really have to work on this. And the other big thing is that, you know, Dave Hextall, I don't think he's managed. The Kraken have always been a wild card team at best, and it's because they're still trying to develop. They're, you know, they didn't get the Vegas treatment where they've got everybody they ever wanted. They're still trying to evolve, and the Kraken are going to be bad for a little bit. I mean, not very long. They've got some good prospects coming up the ranks, but I'm excited to see what he can do.
I'm going to steal your thunder as our resident hot take artist for a second, and my controversial take here, the Seattle Kraken are exactly what an expansion team should look like in the first couple years of its existence.
Well, that was something that you and I talked about. I mean, that was something that you and I talked about previously. It is nice that they're not out flying out the gates in the Stanley Cup final like Vegas was. But again, I mean, the Kraken have kind of just been like one of those teams that you're like, oh yeah, they have a team out there. You know, which is unfortunate. But back to Dave Hextall, I think he'll be really good with the Avalanche so long as, you know, him and Bednar get on the same page. I can't imagine that there's, you know, any, you know, I can't imagine there's any bad blood from 2023, except maybe Eberle.
Oh, God, that's a conversation for a different time.
But yeah, he should fit in well. And I mean, anything on the power play needs to change, anything and everything. Even if he's not managing the power play himself, Dave Hextall, something's got to change. You can't be like, you have to score 5-on-3, or you have to score when you have a double minor penalty, especially when, you know, Mason Marchman's just giving it to you at that point.
I mean, yeah. Take a look at the Avalanche from 2023-24, who are in the top five on the power play with a 24.5% success rate. So you know, success can happen with some of the elite talent that they have on this team. it's not a far stretch to think that they can get back to that point. It's just now you've got somebody new managing it who can kind of give a new eye and say, okay, no, here's what worked. And I'm wondering what Hackstall can provide to that.
I'll say one thing real quick, then I'll give it to you, Gavin.
Go ahead, bud.
I mean, who'd you have in Seattle and Philadelphia on that power play? I mean, I don't know if he was there when Jacob Voracek was there. And I mean, your main guy would have been Konecny, maybe, on the Flyers. Then your main guy on the Kraken would have been McCann. We're talking about, like, two totally different – like, McCann's an elite player. But, yeah, I mean, we're talking about, like, the superstars' faces of the league. So, Gavin, over to you.
Yeah, no, I was saying when it comes to the power play, something else that also gives me hope is seeing how structural Dave Hextall is, and also applying that to how basically the newest power plays in the NHL are working. The evolution of the NHL power play seems to be playing below the goal line, forcing penalty killers to face their own net. And then because they're disoriented and it's way harder to defend that way, they're then being able to whip the puck around at will, make cross-ice passes, completely expose the back door. It also helps if you run a stupid diamond system from a power penalty kill guy that should have been fired years ago, but that's besides the point. It's also a situation where it's basically how the NHL power play will evolve. We saw Dallas be a pretty horrific 5-on-5 team in these last playoffs, but survive against every single team they played against, whether it was the Avs, the Winnipeg Jets, who were a joke to begin with, and the Edmonton Oilers. They were completely able to, no matter what the other team was doing on 5-on-5, even if they were dominating, even if they had good PKs at other points in the playoffs, they were still able to exploit it because of that power play. So that's something that I think needs to be analyzed. It needs to be completely, you know, you need to hit the ground running on that if you're the Avs, because that's very clearly the complete evolution of what the power play needs to be. And really, that's something that I think Dave Hextall can bring the structure and the discipline to this power play group in order to do. And of course, like you said, Grant, he's not working with Jared McCann and Matty Beniers. He's working with Cale Makar and Nathan MacKinnon and Necas and Nichushkin and a lot of a wealth of talent that he can work with. Before I get into the rant that will take years off of my life expectancy or increase it massively, was there anything you guys wanted to say?
I think one thing that the Avalanche could do, and you see that if you watch the Edmonton Oilers, you see this all the time. And I'm not saying that maybe MacKinnon should be the one, but I think Necas could actually be a makeshift McDavid, because if you watch the Oilers on the power play, McDavid is all around the ice. I mean, he is not like rooted to any one spot at all. Now MacKinnon's lethal on the one timer, even though he doesn't fucking hit it. He's lethal on the one timer, just like Dreisaitl. And I think if you're going to do this whole Natchez and MacKinnon thing on the top line, you can adopt a little bit from the Oilers and have, I mean, Natchez is not McDavid, right? But he has skill and he has speed like McDavid, where maybe they could try something new like that, because the 1-3-1 was killing them. Ever since Mikko Rantanen was gone and you put Drouin on that right bumper, You're not getting any threats over there. You might get a pass, and you might just get like, dude, it's the net's wide open. Shoot, please, for the love of God. But that's what I'd like to see new on the power play. I'd like to, the 1-3-1 is good if you have two people, if you have two different people who are willing and able to hit the one timer. Mm-hmm. I think they should look elsewhere in terms of ideas. I'm hungry. Leave me alone.
Speaking of hungry, it seems like Gavin, he's got some problems and I remember when I was sitting in the media room and they made the announcement about Ray Bennett, I texted you and it was like fireworks erupted. And I'm interested to hear, first off, your thoughts on Ray Bennett's system and how the Avalanche kind of getting away from him as a head coach or an assistant coach and heading the power play benefits the Avalanche.
Yeah. So one thing I want to give credit to before I just completely destroy this man's soul
and eviscerate this man
is he has been the Avalanche's assistant coach, power play coach, since the 2017-2018 season. So that's the season right after the Avs had their horrific like 16-17 season. And he actually managed to bring a good voice to the group. He was able to turn them into a solid power play group. They weren't bottom of the league like they were. They were actually competing well enough. There were some like eighth best in the league. There were some years where they finished fifth. Never in the top four, never in the top three, where you would want a team that had a Mikko Rantanen, a Cale Makar, a Nathan MacKinnon, like a wealth of talent like that. You would expect it to be higher. But the credit I'll give to him is he did actually manage to, of course, have a good power play for the Avs. And he was the power play coach when the Avs won the Cup. So he is a Stanley Cup winner. And that will be the end of all the good things I ever say about Ray Bennett. The rest is how remarkably stubborn and ineffective he was at the end of his time with the Avalanche. At best, he was in a situation where the players completely tuned him out, weren't listening to him whatsoever, went rogue. When he said, we're going to put Nichushkin on the bumper, they said, fuck it, we're putting Lehkonen. That's the best I can give to Ray Bennett, is the players completely ignored him. They committed mutiny. They're all going to be charged with felony counts. And they have no hope of listening to him whatsoever. And he completely lost the room and all signs of intelligence he had in his brain. That's the best that it could possibly be with Ray Bennett. At worst, he made incredibly stupid decisions. I have a pop quiz for you both. It's, it's summer. Guess what? It's summer school.
No. Let's say,
I'm going to come up with a hypothetical situation. I'm not going to say anything specific. Let's say you're playing the Dallas Stars in round one and you're trying to score on a goalie named Jake Oettinger. I made that up. you have to put in the bumper spot because this is a big dude. Jake Oettinger's big. You need to screen him. You need to put shots on net. Let's assume that you're going to put a guy on the bumper spot. Do you choose A, career well-known best bumper player in the league, Brock Nelson, that you acquired at the trade deadline? Do you B, put in your returning captain that somehow made a magnificent return and is playing exactly how he did when he left?
SB nominee, also, by the way.
Sorry, what?
SB nominee.
Yes, sir. And who is also one of the best net front presences in the league. He's great at tipping. Do you see, put in the guy that had been filling that role for you ever since Gabe Landeskog got injured, in Val Nichushkin, who had also found massive success in tipping, and who's also a big guy? Or do you D, ensure that you are fired almost immediately after the series ends and put 5'11", small Arturi Lehkonen to screen the goalie? Which one of those do you think he did to effectively win round one?
I feel like this is a trick question.
don't be afraid.
Valerie Nichushkin, thank you very much. Choo-choo train all the way, baby.
We're going to put Arturi Lehkonen in. And when it doesn't work in game six, guess what? We're running it back again in game seven. It's putting Arturi Lehkonen in the bumper spot. And then the next day, you're getting emails from McDonald's asking if you want a job there because you just got fired for being a moron. That is the legacy of Ray Bennett. Absolutely stubborn decisions. Was fired way too late after he cost the Avs multiple series. I'm not going to insult his physical appearance. Takes a lot of effort. Yeah.
Bald.
Have fun in the Isle system. And I feel bad for Callum Ritchie that's over there. I feel bad for Cole Yzerman that are getting there and saying, I'm going to run a good power play. Sorry, kids. No, you're not. Welcome to the real world. Ray Bennett's your power play coach. Goodbye. I don't miss you. You basically killed the Avs season. If you can't score a 5-on-3 in overtime, yeah. After this moment, I will no longer speak your name ever again.
I will say, not in defense of Ray Bennett, but this seems like an Avalanche coaching issue overall. I'd say this goes to Bednar as well. They haven't found a way to effectively take their game plan and modify it for opponents. Because what works against the Dallas Stars does not work against the Florida Panthers. It does not work against the Boston Bruins. It does not work against the Edmonton Oilers. Sometimes. Sometimes the Avalanche blow a 3-0 lead.
Sometimes?
Shut up. But... It's a whole structure thing, I think, and like Gavin's saying, putting one guy on and sticking to that strategy. I can vividly remember 2020-2021 when it was the shortened season and the Avalanche were playing the Vegas Golden Knights. You went up two games and proceeded to lose the next four. And I remember having the big criticism of Jared Bednar saying, you did not. The only thing that you changed in that series was you put Brandon Saad with McKinnon, and I think it was Landeskog, because I think they dropped Rantanen down to Kadri's line with Berkey way back when, or maybe it was Donskoy. I can't remember. But then, you know, 2022 rolled around and Jared Bednar was fluctuating the lineup, making changes where he saw fit. You know, you had JT Compher up on the second line. That wasn't doing it for you as him as a winger. So you dropped him back down. You moved someone else up. And I was singing his praises. I really was. And then there's the famous thing that he always says every interview is that we're going to play our game and as long as we play our game, we're going to win. And that's great. And Ray Bennett probably thought the same thing, where we're going to run our power play and we're going to win with our power play because we've done it in the past. It's not 2022. You don't have the same weapons that you once did, right? Especially now that you lost Mikko Rantanen, you know, one of your top power play scorers. Your adherence to stick to something that was at best streaky and at worst embarrassing cost you severely. And that's not just a Ray Bennett thing. That's a Bednar thing too. I mean, things, you know, if you're coming up against a team like the Dallas Stars, whose whole goal is they're going to make you dump and they're going to make you deal with their 6'4" defenseman, that something doesn't need to change dramatically, but just altered a little bit. So I totally understand. Like, Gavin's totally right. Ray Bennett would not, you know, He made wrong decisions, and it's fine to make wrong decisions for one game, but it's when you stack that up over multiple games and multiple series and multiple, you know, 10 game stretches, and you think, what are we still doing with these decisions? They're not working. Sometimes, yes, things go into a slump, but you know, you have to, when you see something's not working, you can't keep doing it. That's the definition of insanity.
Yeah, and I would just add to that as well. Like, you saw the power play just be completely flat-footed. And if you want to, you know, play your game, you know, we're going to play our game that works, except you've only won one round in 3 years. So I don't know what game you're talking about. It must be the opponent's game if that's who we're talking about. But yeah, I mean, if we're talking about like our game, the power play has to move its feet. And that's kind of the most like cliche hockey thing to say is move your feet. But when they're standing completely stagnant and still and kind of just making boring passes, no one really wants to shoot it. The best way, if you're going to say, nope, we're going to stick to our system, which is why I'm really happy that Dave Haxtell might be here, is to say, if we're going to keep doing this, at least move your feet, because like, at least teams won't be able to say, we know what they're going to do. It's, we know what they're going to do. They're going to move their feet, but good luck trying to contain them, because go cover that guy. Well, that's Nathan MacKinnon. I can't really do that. He's going to deke me aside. He's going to open up a shooting lane. It's going to be perfect. Okay, well, he just put it back to point. Who's there? That's Cale Makar. He's going to deke me out of my skates, probably end my career, and then score. So, and then it's kind of just that type of situation where it's, you can play your game if your game actually works. And the Avalanche just quite honestly haven't for several years now.
And I mean, they've got a new voice in the locker room, which you can only hope, with the Islanders finishing second to last on the power play last season, that, you know, maybe a new voice will also work for them. But like I said, Dave Haxtell has,
you know, this new voice, new outlook. Hopefully we can kind of get past some of that stubbornness we did see with Ray Bennett, which I do think did end up blending into a lot of what Bednar kind of enforced, especially in the last half of the season. But moving on from,
I got one more thing to say. I think Gavin's right. What the Avalanche have been doing for the last three seasons have yielded great regular season success. It has not yielded great postseason success. And one of the big proponents of that is it was really evident in 2022, 2023. It was the first power play, or it was, you know, have Girard go down the left side. Hopefully he can find the seam. He can find the guy up front, and hopefully they can get a tap-in goal. Now that you do have cap, a little more depth, a little less top heaviness, and you're going to have Brent Burns, a guy who has manned the power play for almost every team he's played on, you have options here to at least say, if our power play one's not going to work, we need to develop a really good a power play two that's not going to be just we're throwing guys out there because those are our skilled players, and, you know, we're going to once they're done, the third line's going back out anyways. And if you're the Avalanche and you're able to actually effectively create a second power play, that can also help the first power play, because if you're giving them different looks, or if you're giving each power play different looks and they're both effective, you can start being like, okay, well, power play one's working against this kind of set defense or set penalty kill, and power play two's working against this kind of set penalty kill, and that could just be even better. But you know, maybe that's not Ray Bennett's fault, because honestly, the second power play has lacked in skill for a while now, but maybe with more depth, maybe with people that you can trade for, because you have a ton of cap, but you have a good amount. You can get some more skilled guys so that you're able to effectively create that second power play, which they haven't had at all.
Yeah. Well, moving on from our newest news behind the bench, want to go a little deeper on the ice to the woodshed, as it has been so kindly named by the Avs broadcast crew and good friend of the podcast, Connor McGahee. A recent graphic was just dropped by Jay Fresh, and full disclaimer, this was clearly a fan vote. So you're looking at maybe potential sway from fan favorites and things of that sort. But going into this, guys, this is a very, very interesting list to me. Looking specifically at the Avs goalies, Mackenzie Blackwood ranked at number 19th on this list. Behind, you know, some guys you can maybe make some cases for this year. I think, you know, Connor Hellebuck had an incredible regular season. There's no shirking him being at the top. Sergei Bobrovsky, you look at him in the postseason, he is a brick wall. I don't think him being fourth is any shirk to anybody below him. But looking at some of the other guys on this list, Dustin Wolf comes to mind. Maybe as much as I love him, UC Saros kind of comes to mind. Your thoughts on looking at this list here?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a little surprising. There are some names in here which I appreciate, you know, Andrei Vasilevsky always being in the top three, Igor Shesterkin, of course. Jake Oettinger remains to be one of the most overrated goalies in the entire NHL. Just, I don't know how he has a better ranking this year than he did multiple years, considering this year also wasn't as good. So it's definitely surprising to me how one postseason series defines his entire reputation. Ilya Sorokin, unfortunately, as much as I like the guy, and I think he's a very good goalie on just a very bad defensive team like the Islanders, which should hopefully be fixed soon because that's the name of their game, has not been having a very good year for quite a bit now. And the fact that he's also being seen so highly is pretty surprising. I think a lot of this is based on reputation. I mean, Husey Soros was a good goaltender, but quite honestly, for the last two seasons, which is kind of a theme you're seeing, he hasn't been all that good. And obviously, Linus Ullmark, I think, is a little ranked a little too low, especially for how good he's been recently. Below Jose Soros is crazy. Jeremy Swayman being anywhere in the top 10 right now after the season he had is also crazy. Same with Thatcher Demko. Might forever have life-changing injuries because of his back and had a horrific season, and he's still ranked 10th this season. I mean, what are we doing? Jacob Markstrom, severely inconsistent and still ranked very well. Also crazy. Dustin Wolf, amazing first season. Besides that, was a prospect, and somehow he's rated higher than a guy like Mackenzie Blackwood, who had an admirable save percentage last year in the 24 season with the San Jose Sharks, like a bottom team, the bottom team, considering they got the first overall pick. Yep. And this season with the Avs, and with the Sharks, he had a 9-10, and then he came over with the Avs and was like a top three goalie in the league ever since then. I really don't see how he could be ranked 19th this season. That's a little insane. Frankly, I think that's a lot of bias. I don't agree with it, but that's just me.
I agree with you on, I agree with you on reputation being a major factor here. I do also want to give a little bit of credit. I mean, there were a lot of outstanding goaltenders that kind of made a big difference maker for them. Like, you look at Philip Gustafson. Do the Wild really make it to the playoffs with Andre Fleury playing more of those games than Gustafson? No. Darcy Kemper had his rebound season after really just not doing anything with the Capitals. Frederick Anderson had a great season. Stolarz, amazing too. I think everything that you were saying, Gavin, is yes, this is definitely based on reputation. However, I mean, if we're going to go off reputation, Mackenzie Blackwood was the goalie for teams to get this year, at least. He was the only goalie that anybody really had on their radar. And I think that says a lot, because I think there were conversations that the Oilers were looking into getting him. And I think it is a gut check time for Mackenzie Blackwood this year. You're not underrated. You're right up there with the best goalies in the league, and now you can prove it, because I think he is a great goaltender. I think he certainly can be on the same par as Stolarz, Gustafson, definitely better than that water bottle throwing Jordan Binnington. But you know, Team Canada won the Four Nations face off. So let's see how he does in the Olympics. And you know, I think if you're Mackenzie Blackwood, this is finally your shot to establish yourself as maybe not like top five goalie. There's just too many good goalies in this league. I mean, hell, Linus Ullmark is ranked number 8 on this list, and you know, I mean, did the Ottawa Senators really make it with who they have as their backup last year? It was because Korpisalo was in the trade to the Bruins. But I mean, do they really? I mean, Levi Marilainen, I don't think he was their backup last year. But I mean, you know, does he even make it? But I think Mackenzie Blackwood could be your like Logan Thompson, Philip Gustafson, like the extremely solid goaltender that you have locked up for the next 5 years at $5.5 million. You know, it's amazing to see that the Avalanche, for the first time really since, I mean, maybe Grubauer's Vezina season, have someone who is reliable and net. I don't want to say fantastic, because he still has a little bit more to prove, but definitely reliable compared to the likes of Georgiev, and definitely compared to the likes of Darcy Kemper, because holy Lord, some of those 2022 goals in the cup playoffs were unbelievably how he let those in. Bailey, what do you think?
I'm kind of the same mindset. And you think back to what Joe Sakic and Chris McFarland had to say at the exit interview that they held after they were promptly kicked out of round one before round two of this last year's playoffs. And Joe Sakic's words, I don't quote me verbatim here, but basically said we really liked the core that we ended with. Now you're looking at this roster, you're missing Charlie Coyle, acquired at the trade deadline. You're missing Miles Wood, who spent a good amount of time with this team and provided a lot of good bottom six depth. You're missing, or you have the addition of Brent Burns coming in and rounding out, adding some veteran presence to that blue line. This is probably one of the better teams that Mackenzie Blackwood has played in front of, barring, you know, last year's squad. You're also looking at a Mackenzie Blackwood who had his first ever experience in the postseason and put up incredible performances, despite some of the performance in front of him. There's absolutely a conversation to be had about whether or not a player or a goaltender like him can become a top 10 goaltender in the league, especially combining regular season and postseason stats. I mean, if you can look at a guy like Connor Hellebuck and continue to rank him as highly as you did, despite the performance that he had with Winnipeg in this past postseason, there's absolutely a conversation to be had about Mackenzie Blackwood in this upcoming season.
Oh yeah, I think without a doubt, really. I mean, he's the rule about the top 10 goaltenders is everyone below the top five, like so from 6 to 10, always changes every season. That's pretty much always going to be a different goaltender in terms of just statistical success. So really, you see like some of the goalies, Sergei Bobrovsky, awesome goalie in the playoffs, not so much so in the regular season. Definitely a guy that I honestly, my hot take is Mackenzie Blackwood's at minimum going to be the fifth best goalie in the NHL by the end of the season.
Fair.
Hot take.
I guess we all have them going into this episode. Not sure if we want to touch on the defense list, because while the forward list has not been announced, Jay Fresh did release their rankings, or at least the fan voted rankings for the top. They released top 125. But I really want to take a look at this top 10 list that they released here while I'm pulling it up. Obviously, you know, Cale Makar is ranked first on this list. Who is surprised? Quinn Hughes ranked second. And then for me, it kind of goes downhill a little bit. Rasmus Dahlin ranked at third. Miro Heiskanen, which I honestly might have ranked at third if Zach Werenski is not that pick.
Better than Quinn Hughes for sure, Miro Heiskanen.
This year overall.
Overall.
That's maybe a different conversation for a different. I don't know.
I'll give a quick synopsis here. Miro Heiskanen is the if you didn't have Cale Makar in this league, he would be the model defenseman, both on the defensive side and on the offensive side. You're getting just one of the most solid players that you can ask for in a defenseman. I mean, the fact that he's so lethal, both on the penalty kill, power play, 5-on-5, he's a nightmare against. Like, I rarely ever see Heiskanen really scored on compared to Quinn Hughes. And that's also because Quinn Hughes is just small. I mean, Miro Heiskanen's 6'1" and a pretty bigger guy. But yes, Miro Heiskanen, definitely second best defenseman in the NHL, even though he plays for the Dallas Stars.
That's high praise there, folks. Adam Fox was an interesting ranking, I think, for me, coming in at seventh. I understand why he is there, given the season that this New York Rangers team kind of had, a fall from grace, if you will, considering their prior season. I will say, if we're talking about top 32, because I got the list wrong, it is the top 32 defensemen, and then in that thread they did go through and rank the top 125 defensemen. I given the performance that he had in this last playoffs, and it's not an Avs player, it is actually the opponent that they played in round one, I kind of like seeing Thomas Harley at 14th. Now, with that said, I don't know if I would rank him above Devon Taves, who falls at 15th on this list. I feel like Devon Taves, it wasn't his best, but it wasn't his worst season. I really liked some of the steps that he took offensively this year. But I don't know, Gavin, I'll throw it over to you. You kind of mentioned before hitting record that, you know, Adam Fox, below Jacob Slavin, was a bit of a kind of rub for you. I, being the Jacob Slavin, not lover, but appreciator, we talked about him being like the model stay-at-home defenseman. And I really think, especially in this last Four Nations tournament, really kind of put him on a pedestal for a lot of people. So I will say I like seeing Slavin ranked as high as he is, but Adam Fox was somebody you brought up. Yeah.
And I think what's important to look at this list and kind of realize is, those of you who ever find the list, you'll just have to take our word for it. We might.
It'll be linked in the show notes below.
It will be. So the thing you have to realize is this is not only based off of reputation, but it's also based off of current season success. So in terms of like just this last season, yeah, absolutely. I put Slavin in ahead of Fox. But if we're talking about overall, no way. And what's honestly pretty interesting, this is just a side note because I know we were talking about the Olympics earlier. Funny enough, it's so funny to see how deep Canada is at forward. But and then obviously the USA has plenty of good forwards. But then in every other position, the Americans just have so much depth at every position. I mean, they got guys like Lane Hudson who didn't even make the roster for this last like Olympics. And you've got guys like Charlie McAvoy and Adam Fox and Werenski and Slavin and just all of these just wealth of just American defensemen. Jake Sanderson, Quinn Hughes, that
Faber.
Faber, Zeev Boyum, who didn't even make the roster. Like all these dudes that they can straight up leave off the roster and just call in whenever they want. And it's the same for goaltending. Like it's like the Russian and American goalies are like dominating the NHL right now. It is interesting to see how it breaks down by nation. But getting back on track, taking my idiot meds,
making sure that we promise.
Adam Fox, I think, like Jacob Slavin is the I was talking about it before the show. He's the picture perfect example of why there should be a defensive defenseman award given out instead of just the Norris, which Bailey, you had some criticism of. You said that's definitely like a points thing, and it absolutely is. But Jacob Slavin,
as impressive as it is, my little disclaimer. Anyway,
but Adam Fox, like while not as good as Jacob Slavin, Fox is like much better offensively than Slavin, and Fox is like one of the best like neutral zone trap players and just defensive defenseman as well as being a good offensive defenseman in the league. Like he has that balance. He's no like Chris Tanev. He's no Jacob Slavin, but he's very good defensively and he's also very good offensively. So I think he's much more of a well-rounded defenseman than Jacob Slavin is. And I think that's why he should be above him in any ranking you do. I think Victor Hedman's a little too high. I think the age has started to get to him. I think, what did I say? He was 35. He's getting up there in age. Obviously is not like the monster he used to be. Still very good. I think Evan Bouchard, for all that I absolutely love to dog on him, is too low as well. I think he should be at least above a guy like Roman Josi, in my opinion, as good as
Merchant.
Yeah, but you also got to look at his expected goals away from McDavid and Draisaitl. It's still good. So the narrative that he's a merchant just kind of doesn't work. As much as I love Devon Taves as well, one of the handsomest defensemen in the entire league, love the guy, chiseled jawline. What was I talking about? Oh, yeah. That's right. I don't think he's better than Jake Sanderson. I think Jake Sanderson is like a very underrated defenseman. And I would say the same thing with Mackenzie Weegar. Mackenzie Weegar has the unfortunate disadvantage of playing in Calgary and being in Canada in general. But also he plays on the Flames, the permanent little brother to the Edmonton Oilers. I don't even hate the Flames. That just kind of came out of nowhere. But yeah, the Mackenzie Weegar's awesome. I absolutely love the guy. Great at producing. He's my, like, I take him every year in my fantasy league. He's awesome. He's an absolute peripheral god. He's better than Devontaeves. Like, I'm sorry. Devontaeves is awesome. Mackenzie Weegar is better. It's the same with Jake Sanderson. Very young defenseman. I think will win a Norris in his career. Great defensively. He's actually becoming like one of the like best like quiet defensemen in the league, but also just provides good offense and has a lot of steps to take with Ottawa. So as much as I like the home field like bias, I don't think Devontaeves is just that good. But then again, this is based off of reputation, and Devontaeves has just been so good for so long, despite kind of having a down year in production last year.
Well, there's also to be said about him playing next to the best defenseman in the NHL.
Man, statisticians would absolutely hate you and grill you for that. They love Devontaeves in terms of statistics. They love him. I mean, that was really the reason the Avalanche went out and got him from the Islanders, because, oh my God, the statistical anomaly. And you know, he's playing. Yeah. And, you know, yeah, he's playing next to Cale Makar. But I will say, though, in defense of Devontaeves, there was a stretch, I think it was a year ago, I think it was 2 years ago, where Makar was sidelined for a bit, and Taves had all the responsibility. And, I mean, he stepped up in a big way. I think I do agree with you totally. He did take a step back this year. I wholeheartedly believe that both him and Makar were not at 100% throughout the season, especially Taser, because sometimes you saw it, like sometimes something happened and you, or he got beat and you're like, yeah, everybody's going to get beat now and then. But I mean, man, that should not have happened right there. To pull up the rest of the rankings and the rest of the Avalanche on the rankings, Samuel Girard is at number 71. This is out of the top 125 defensemen in the league, which has me screaming into my pillow every night. And then you actually have Brent Burns at ranked 78th, according to the fans. A big step back from last year, where he was previously ranked 39th, but he's 40, you know.
And had a really kind of, compared to previous seasons, mm-hmm. last season was not his best by a huge margin.
And like what we were talking about earlier with Mackenzie Blackwood being this is his season, really is a gut check season for Mackenzie Blackwood. Sam Malinsky is not on this list. Fair enough. I mean, you know, you can't expect someone whose first real season in the NHL be there. But I would realistically expect Sam Malinsky to take a bigger step forwards and crack into this 125, you know, defenseman list, especially when you have like guys like Ryan Lindgren at 122. You guys have like, you have Mario Ferraro at 114. You have Brett Kulak up there. You have, you know, Ristolainen up there. You have, you know, guys that, you know, are on the border. And I think Malinsky, proving himself this season, can actually make his way on there.
No, I agree. I'm a Malinsky truther. I like him a lot.
for being a smaller defenseman too, I really think he took a big step in his pro career.
He's 6 foot. He can play in the corners. There's no 5'10", 175 Girard.
Oh God, here we go.
One thing I am very excited about is that Sam Malinsky kind of seems to be like a diet, like new Coke. New like 80s freak version of Cale Makar, and where it's the two steps he takes before and after receiving the puck that opens up a lot of shooting lanes for him, and deception and fooling like a guy that's coming to absolutely truck him over. And that's the way he's able to generate his offense. And when he's doing that, he plays great. And that's something we really didn't see throughout most of the entire like middle chunk of the season from Sam Malinsky. We saw it at the beginning, and then luckily we saw it at the end. And that was something that I really hope is able to like consistently be inconsistent for at least like two out of every five games instead of having a very long like 50 game stretch where we don't see it. I'm very excited to see what Sam Molinsky can do next to Brett Burns as well. Just having like a good veteran guy to play next to, who also has kind of made his career doing the same thing and being that good offensive defenseman. Definitely a guy that can kind of just come up to him and say, hello, son, you were probably 5 years old when I started playing hockey, but here's what I know. And that's kind of what I'm excited to see, is like actually having a guy like Brett Burns sort of mentor a guy like Sam Molinsky and provide him that level of insight into an aspect of his game that I think him and Makar share.
Yeah. Well, to end things off, and we didn't put this in our kind of private show notes talking about things, I do want to kind of go over some of the comments from Chris McFarland following training camp. Or the development camp that happened this past week or last week. One of the big ones that stood out to me, and I had asked him towards the end of his availability, more pertaining to Eric Johnson than anything, what his plans were for the rest of the former players that are now currently UFAs sitting on the market. His comment exactly was that they have talked to all of their UFAs, including Eric Johnson, and that right now they'll of course continue to look at the market, talk about trades, talk with other teams to see something, maybe if something works for them. But right now they're sitting tight. With their current roster looking as it does right now, Gavin, is that a good idea?
Sitting tight is an interesting way of saying that, because what else are you doing? You've watched multiple coaches from your AHL program leave, straight up, just walk away. And you have openings that they could have taken for you, and they got promoted. We're looking for an AHL head coach. Well, guess what? Toby Peterson, the guy that you let walk, just got hired as Dallas's head coach for the Texas Stars, their AHL team. Were you making another plan that just kind of like that slipped your mind to hire him? I'm waiting to see it. That's hilarious. Hanging out at dev camp, watching a bunch of third and fourth rounders. Not much to see there. I don't know if he remembers, but he kind of sold all of our other prospects. I don't really know what he's looking at. He should be looking at making a better roster, but I think someone needs to either wake him up or send a missing persons report to his house, because I really don't understand what he's doing at this moment. Obviously, I will give him some grace. This free agent class sucks. Yeah. I do not expect the Avs to make a ton of moves in this free agency. There's a few deals which I'm a little upset about. There was a guy, like a third line wing, who I think is very good analytically, that went to the Tampa Bay Lightning. It's Florida. No income tax, that whole thing. I kind of hate saying that as a point, but it's a real thing.
It is.
No matter how much Bettman wants to ignore it.
Exactly. Pia Suter was someone I really liked as a 3C option for the Avs. He didn't go to a contender. He went to the Blues. So there's some personal decision there. If a team like Dallas got him, if a team like the Florida Panthers, no income tax again, like if any other team that's sort of a playoff team got him, I would be like, oh man, that's a missed opportunity. He went to the Blues. Like, I think there's a personal decision there. Really, other than that, I'm not really like kind of pulling my hair out saying, why couldn't we do that? I look at Isaac Howard signing with the, or getting acquired by the Edmonton Oilers for like nothing. And I say, is Chris McFarland sleeping? Like, what's happening? Why couldn't we just like a good move like that? Maybe if we had some prospects left, we could have actually traded someone worthwhile for it. But guess what? We got Charlie Coyle for less than 20 games, so worth it. And then there's a situation where, honestly, I think that the Avs' money is to be – money, for lack of a better word. That's a salary cap pun – is to be made in the trade market. I really think that trades are the name of the game. I for the life of me, I was desperately trying to find a tweet to go into one of my videos earlier today, but I couldn't find it. But basically, it was Elliot Friedman saying, like, a lot of contenders, a lot of teams have plenty of salary cap left over to spend that they haven't spent yet in free agency. And I think that plenty of teams are gearing up for trades, and you're not seeing any trades in the NHL. It is so eerily quiet where you're wondering what's happening. We thought after Nick Ehlers signed that like the ball would start rolling and things would start going down, and they haven't. So the question is like, what is everyone else doing? But really, like, I think trades are the name of the game as to what's going to happen for the Avs. Do the Avs trade Martin Necas for better defensive options and then try and find someone who like might not be as good as Martin Necas, but can play that right time threat on the power play to like try and do the analytical let's even it out strategy? Do the Avs try and make a trade for Evan Rodriguez because the Florida Panthers desperately need to dump cap space, basically approximately $3 million, which guess who makes $3 million? Evan Rodriguez. So it's and the Avs have picks that they can trade for him. So that's the type of situation where you're looking at where the Avs could be made. Frankly, when we're going back to looking at the Avs roster, I see a lot of people dooming about the bottom six. Like, you guys know that Jack Drury is going to be the 3C, right? Like, that's going to be what the experiment is. I think that Jack Drury can be a good 3C.
I mean, really, Chris McFarland talking after the draft all but confirmed that yeah, this is an experiment they are looking at and playing a bigger role.
I think he has the chops too. I think he also is a great like room guy, like very mm-hmm. underappreciated. He's been the captain. He has a letter. He had a letter when he played in the NHL. Like he's a good dude. And I think he can really contribute a lot as he gets older because he's only like 25 years old. So him being the 3C, he's got a right wing in Ross Colton. That makes your Ross Colton thing way easier because Ross Colton is no longer an expensive, like overpaid right wing. He's now a reasonably priced guy next to a very, very cheap third line center that's making under $2 million. And all you have to do is get him a left wing. By the way, unrelated, Evan Rodriguez is a left wing.
Technically, he's a center, I think. Technically a center.
I would take another look at that.
High school? Like, what are we...
that technically, NHL 25 had him as a center.
Well, I would take another look at that Stanley Cup winning championship team, yeah. Grant.
When you have Barkov, Reinhart, Lundell down the middle, I don't think he needs to play center there. I'm just saying,
put a little more respect on the only Evan to exist on the cup.
I will say no. One thing right now.
That's not true.
I will.
I'm pretty sure it is.
As both Gavin and Bailey know, I am a Chris McFarland slanderer, hater, and eventually we'll get around to that rant too because it'll be a long one. However, I will say one thing. His decision this year to go all in makes a little bit more sense than it did at the time. Now, I think the one thing that Gavin highlighted was, no, this is not a good free agency. But did the Avs really need a good free agency? Because, I mean, daily faceoff right now, not set in stone, probably not what the lineup's going to look like. Your fourth line is going to be something along the lines of, if they sign Kiwi Ranta, which they most likely will look along the lines of Parker Kelly down the middle, Ivan on one of the wings, and then Kiwi Ranta on the other wing. And then you'll probably have Logan O'Connor play the third line wing with Ross Colton and Jack Drury. You didn't, if you're the Avalanche, you set your entire season up to win the cup first and foremost, but you even took the step beyond that to say, this is a bad free agency, but we don't need a good free agency. We don't need a Nikolai Ehlers. It'd be great to get him, but we don't need that. We need quality guys down the depth. Now, did you get that at all after setting up your entire season plus off season to do that? I think that might be the biggest critique that you have with this Avalanche, the Avalanche this summer, is that you set your lineup to have Necas, MacKinnon, Landeskog, Nelson, Nichushkin. You set it up to have the top six confirmed. But what you didn't set up was to find guys to play in the depth and not relying on rookies. Because if you're going to rely on rookies, you're playing with fire. Unless you just expect one of them to become Logan Stankoven, or you expect one of them to become Wyatt Johnston, you're not doing much. So it's even more puzzling because once you traded away Coyle and Wood, you effectively free up cap just to get depth pieces for maybe $3 million and have some cap left over in case shit really hits the fan and you need something. But with no moves other than Brent Burns, it makes no sense as to what everything just led up to in the point of we're going for the cup. We didn't get the cup. We lost in round one again. But we're going to trade away. We're going to get a little more cap. We're going to set our top six, and we're going to do nothing with it. What's the game plan there? Is there a game plan, or are you just fixing potholes when they you know, come up?
Yeah, no, I agree with that. Yeah, honestly, it's with all like the kind of the doom and gloom about it, though, I try and zoom out and realize that what we're complaining about is the bottom six of a lineup. Like, we have, like, compare this to last year. It was, we don't know what's happening with Nichushkin because he got suspended again. We don't know what's happening with Arturi Lehkonen because he's injured again. So it's now a situation where the entire top six should be coming in completely healthy. You have your captain back in Gabe Landeskog. You have what should be one of the best pairings or best tandems in the NHL in a goaltending duo, the Woodshed, best name ever for a goaltending tandem, hands down. And you have an elite top pair in Cale Makar and Devon Taves. And even when they had like a down year, it's still a top five, top pair in the entire NHL. So now, like, the real major surgery begins. Obviously, like, it's hard to look at it in terms of, like, multiple years, but next offseason is very, very good. It's projected to have a lot of free agents. The Avs are actually also predicted to have a lot of money that offseason as well to re-sign a bunch of guys. And really, it's going to be interesting to see what happens there. But for this season, frankly, they've got all the major foundations of their lineup set. I really want them to make at least two more moves, one to at least make a trade for the bottom six to make it even better, and one for the defenseman, because you've ran this defense over and over again. It's not good. The second pair is horrible. It should be absolutely nuked into the sun.
That rant coming soon.
Yeah, rant's coming soon. Grant, you and I are going to have a lot.
Gerard rant coming soon.
And
remind me to bring the popcorn to next episode.
But
yeah, we'll take over. We'll take over that one. You won't even say a word for 40 minutes.
Exactly. I will end my little teaser, my little breadcrumb trail for the second pairing rant going in. Is, do you think it's wise to spend almost $10 million on a second pairing that wasn't even there when you won the cup? And instead, don't sign Nazem Kadri to that amount of money.
It was there for two rounds.
And then complain that you don't have money after signing outrageous contracts. Do you think that was wise?
It was there for two rounds.
That's
and with that, that's going to, yeah, I was going to say, be sure to tune in to our next episode. But for now, that's going to do it for this episode of the Avalanche Warning. Lots covered, lots to cover, talking about the bottom six. There's the question mark of what's going to happen to Logan O'Connor's spot while he is out recovering from surgery for the next couple of months. But
he'll be back for the regular season.
I don't think so.
Probably like November.
They estimated his return time to be October.
We'll talk about that next episode. For the time being, Gavin, where can the people find you?
You can find me over at YouTube. I'm on the Avalanche Digest channel. I'm the co-host of that. We make a lot of good short form content. I've talked about Brett Burns before. I've just released a video talking about potential trade scenarios involving Martin Neches, and we always try and keep you updated as soon as possible. So if you don't want to wait every Wednesday for the pod to inform you, just go over there and you can get little snippets, little appetizers before you get your main entree, which is this show.
Grant, where can the people find you?
You can find me on X, having a jolly old time, you know, just watching Avalanche games. If you want my actual Twitter handle, it'll be at Grant_Foster_15. Mostly you will see a lot of comments directed at refs, but it won't be as interesting as Bailey Curtis.
And as far, before I get into all of my plugs, you can find us, the Avalanche Warning, over on X at Avs Warning Pod. Be sure to give us a follow over there to keep up on all of the episodes dropping. That's where you'll get all the notifications. Don't miss an episode. Be sure to click the link in our bio to not only find out where you can listen to us, but where to find all of our cool happenings outside of the podcast as well, including the Hockey Podcast Network, our wonderful network that graciously lets us do this in our free time and gives us a voice. Be sure to go follow them over on X. And I believe their Instagram handle is also HockeyPodNet. Not only are you going to find maybe some other Avalanche content, you can find content from teams all around the league, including podcasts hosted by cast members of Shorzy. They've got a lot of really cool podcasts, and you'll find something of your interest over there. So be sure to head over to HockeyPodNet, give them a follow over on X, head over to the website, and find your next listen following this one. As for myself, you can find me over on X at Bailey Curtis, and that is Bailey with two Y's. Find me over on Instagram at Bailey Lynn Curtis. If you are looking for some content in the form of writing and maybe not listening for your car rides and things of that sort, find me over at the Hockey News. I am the resident Colorado Avalanche beat reporter for the Hockey News. Find my articles over there on the website. Me and Stefan Rubino, my other co-site manager, we've got some great content with breaking news, think pieces, whatever your heart desires regarding the Avalanche. Be sure to go check us out over there. In the meantime, we will see you guys next week here at the Avalanche Warning. See ya.